Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, first half of the show, I'll tell you about having a little chat with Larry David and how that went. And we'll do some tales from the cheap as well. First, Tommy John. Tommy John doesn't give an F. They give three Fs: fabric, fit, and function. Proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you've ever worn before. No wedgie guarantee. Comfortable stay-put waistbands. Luxurious, soft, feather-light, moisture-wicking, breathable fabrics designed to move with you. No bunching. No riding up. I'm wearing mine right now. I'm wearing the Tommy John underwear. I'm also wearing the t-shirt, and I'm wearing the loungewear long sleeve pullover as well. So comfortable, especially during the winter. Look, you're going to love it. You can go to TommyJohn.com and order whatever you want, or you can go to over 1,200 retail locations across the country, including Nordstrom's, and that's nationwide. They give three Fs. Upgrade your underwear, would you please? Tommy John. No adjustment needed, right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Grammy Award-winning producer Joe West and motivational speaker Gabe Adams. With Gina Gratt on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and we'll take your calls for Tales from the Cheap. And now, Vince Vaughn canceled him back when they were neighbors. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We love that about you, right, Gina Gratt?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
Everybody got that?
I have my, is that Spaceballs?
It was Spaceballs, actually.
Jesus, I haven't seen that.
Deep pull.
I was on my rowing machine.
Which one?
The fancy schmancy one.
Not the spare?
The one where they're, look, you know, it's kind of weird, but there's all the technology is served to do is pit us against one another. Mm-hmm. I'm on the rowing machine, and it's like Jacob 15 is ahead of you. He's at 6,000 meters, and you're at 5,800 meters, and I'm like, I'm going to catch that bitch.
Guy. It's interactive?
It's literally telling you, like, oh, you're in seventh place. And I'm like, well, screw who's ahead of me. Who's ahead of me? Fuck those guys.
Here
I'm going to show them.
They think they are.
But some stranger in some other part of the land who's trying to get some, probably wife's getting chemotherapy somewhere, and he's probably just trying to forget about his things. And I'm like, oh, fuck that guy. I'm good.
Need my dust.
And when I catch up to him, I'm going upside his head with an oar. It's so sad that I'm trying to row, and I'm like watching SportsCenter, but it also has the screen.
Yeah,
you know?
They know what
and
they're
at
doing.
A certain point, it's like this guy handle, and then it says you. And then, like, you're in 17th place. And first thing I have to do is try to figure out what's going on. Are other people rowing simultaneously?
Right.
And what time is it? And their time zone and blah, blah, blah. But either way, I look up the tote board and I see that, you know, Joe M. is 175 meters ahead of me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll fucking catch that guy in five easy strokes.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Right.
What's your handle in case another rich person wants to catch you?
I don't know what my handle is because all I see is you.
Oh.
Oh, interesting.
And then I had to
what grapple. What handle was you?
I had to grapple.
Hurry up, you.
I had to grapple with, I finished last night. I looked up and I was in first place. And then I was like, oh, no one must have been rowing at this time of night. Or I had the female rower. Maybe I was competing against females instead of males. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to navigate the thing. I just hit 30 minutes.
Way to down round your accomplishment.
I decided. You're not podium material, Carolla. But I did have a couple of good experiences. I pulled up to the Comedy Store and saw my name on the marquee for the first time ever.
Yeah, they tweeted the lineup and you were right there.
And it felt really good. It felt really official. And somebody said, when I went to go there to perform on Monday, they said, when is the last time you played the original room?
Mm.
The original room is the original room. It's sort of small, medium, and large. The belly room's upstairs. It holds 40 people, 35 people. It's very intimate for the quirky, funky time stuff. And then the original room's the one that's kind of right on Sunset, right on the Strip. And then there's the...
main room?
Yeah, the main room. Sorry. The main room, and that's 400 people, and that's kind of where they do the shows that they put on. And as I stated, I'd been doing the shows thinking I was in the Comedy Store in the lineup, but I wasn't.
But
I was just doing the shows that someone else was putting on. So I had this moment where I was talking to Adam, I think the booker, and he said, so when's the last time you did the original room? And I said, well, I've been doing the main room, and I did the belly room, you know, a couple months ago, and I was trying to work out some of this roast material for the Baldwin roast. But the original room, 1986, when I did an open mic here and bombed horribly, and then went home and heard about it on someone's phone machine when their sister called. And they picked up and they talked about how bad I was. That's about the time I played here last. So that was nice. A little frustration on the way to the event, which I'll tell you about in a second. But first, I'm rowing on the machine. I'm just watching SportsCenter with the sound down. And it turns out that Luke Kuechly, the standout linebacker for Carolina Panthers, is retired. And you're looking at the guy. He's 28 years old. He's good looking. He's fresh faced.
He's a stud.
Stud. And he looks young, too.
He's a great player.
And he is young. He's 28 years old.
Oh, there he is.
And he's retiring from pro football.
He looks like a Brolin.
And I'm just staring at him going, Kuechly, retiring. You know, it's eight seasons. Again, eight seasons is a career, but he's got plenty more in him if he wants. He's an all-star or standout, and he's going to start, and he's going to get paid. And he's 28 years old. I don't know who retires at 28. And they do a whole thing about him retiring, and he played eight seasons. And then they do a whole thing about Antonio Gates, who retires after 16 seasons.
Held on for a long time.
Which is almost twice as much as eight, or maybe even more than twice as much.
We'll never know.
But the point is this. I'm doing what I always do, which is good-looking white guy retiring. Somebody comes from money. Just like the San Francisco inside backer or outside backer.
Chris Borland.
Who went after 1 year or two seasons or whatever. One. Turns out his dad's just like a hedge fund guy.
Right.
I was just talking about that with a 49ers buddy of mine. Like, Chris Borland, what could have been?
Right. So, well, what could have been is he could have had early onset dementia as well. So when I see young guys getting out early from dangerous sports and or endeavors, I think somebody's got some money.
Yeah. Some other options.
And when I see the brother who's been in for 16 years, who's getting out, I'm like, somebody doesn't come from a lot of money.
Right.
And I said to Max Zapata to do a deep dive, and Kuechly's family owns some sort of international auto parts distributing, whatever. They seem to have a very successful and large business.
Yeah, that was his grandfather's company. His dad had it, and then they sold it.
And he went to a private school that was expensive, a high school, and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, Antonio Gates, Detroit, wrong side of the tracks.
Oh, his parents didn't sell auto parts? They're from Detroit?
Yeah, you would think. Different kind of Detroit, and he didn't come from anything, so thus he hung in. So, you know, when people talk about love of the game, that's part of it, but there's also business moves that need to be made as well.
Love of your future.
And, you know, your brain may be injured if you hang around for another 8 years, but Antonio Gates is really not in the position to... He has to roll those dice, whereas Luke Kuechly and the aforementioned San Francisco backer... They don't need to roll those dice.
Interesting.
They have they have something they can. Well, also, you're going to run a company theoretically or do something. You know, you're not going to open a chicken sandwich joint. You're going to run something. And I think the rich white guys or even just the rich guys, but I don't know how many rich black guys are in the league, are thinking, you know, I got a whole future here in business and blah blah blah. And I'm gonna need all of my faculties. Yeah. Anyway, it was funny. There was no sound. It was just Luke Kuechly's retiring, and I'm just looking at pictures of Luke Kuechly, and I'm going, he comes for money.
You're a master profiler.
I'm a master profiler. I'm a rowfiler. I was rowing.
Who do you think made more money for the first, Luke Kuechly paid 8 years. How long did, it was 8 years, right? He was trying after 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think made more money in those 8 years, their first 8 years, Antonio Gates or Luke Kuechly?
Kuechly probably made a ton of money. And he came into the league 8 years after Gates.
I was going to say, the contracts obviously
adjust.
Went up.
But Gates is in a slight higher paying position.
Mm-hmm.
So Gates, I guess the question is when Kuechly was in year two and Gates was in year 10, what were they getting paid? I have no idea. I'm sure Gates has been paid well,
mm-hmm.
but I can tell you as somebody who comes from a poor family,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much money you get,
there is no part where you just walk away.
Right. You don't want to walk away. Like you go, and by the way, it can be hammer time. I mean, you can hammer through a lot of cash and owe the government and blah, blah, blah. 2015, Kuechly in 15 signed a $61 million 5-year contract.
Damn.
Which is a ton of dough.
Obviously not going to see all of.
Left the Panthers with $15 million extra cap space or whatever, but anyway, I know they both got paid well. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, well, I knew one guy had a rich family and the other guy didn't. That was what I figured out on the rowing machine. Speaking of early onset dementia, I was sitting in here with Mark Garagos an hour ago, and we were getting ready to start. And Mark's always just banging away on his phone, and at some point. He was, I said, Mark, put the cans on. Here we go. And he was doing that thing where the flap was flapped up.
Yeah.
And it was sucked up. And people don't know about these headphones. They're pretty straightforward, but there's a version of it where the ear flap goes all the way up.
Mm.
The landing ear goes up on one side, but it's down on the other.
Yeah.
And you see people, and then you have to say, hey, no, you got the back side of the thing on your, you got to flap it down.
Isn't it weird how the only headphones that do that seem to be the industry standard for broadcasting?
And every guest is tangled up in them.
They're in every radio station, every podcast.
As I brought up to Garagos, I said, that seems to affect people of a certain age,
uh-huh.
and you're at that age now.
Now you know.
And I said, you know, if I was studying dementia, I would have, I would sit down and go, hey, have a seat. Just go put the headphones on because we want to play you some alternate sounds and see what your memory, whatever. Meanwhile, I'll just be studying.
How
long is he taking? 22-year-old guys just drop them right on. 63-year-old guys struggle,
and
80-year-old guys start pulling down their pants, you know, like to get these headphones on. So I was like, I would be doing a test, and I'd go, just go ahead and slap those headphones on so we could get started with the test. But the whole test would be observing them putting
the
headphones on.
When does the test start? Oh, we'll let you know soon.
Right.
Just get comfortable.
You know it's bad. You know the dementia's taking hold when they actually wear it with the flap up. You know what I mean?
Oh,
when it actually goes on. And they're not struggling. Like, they've decided this is how it must sit.
Can't get any better than this. Yeah, the cold aluminum of the backside pressed up against your side of your head. I said, Mark, you're at that place now. But do not worry, because there's a second phase of this that kicks in, which will be part of my dementia testing. Again, you don't want to get up in people's head and tell them you got to memorize this sequence or whatever it is. I shall be observing. You know what I'm saying? The next one is you know, after you're done with the, struggling with the headphones, and this is for the older patients. Mm-hmm. You know, the headphones are with the 60-something-year-olds.
Okay.
When I have a patient who could be struggling with dementia come to see me in my clinic, and this is age 78 to 85, when they come into the clinic, I say to them, hey, it's so close to noon. I'll tell you what, before we get started, why don't we hit Chick-fil-A? And everyone loves Chick-fil-A, and we'll come back and we'll start the testing. And they go, okay. And then I'll pull my car around, and then they'll get in the passenger seat. And if they reach for the left for the seatbelt, or they find it on the right and put it into the sun visor or something, because the thing I noticed from having an old parent is the seatbelt, your seatbelt skills go as the brain starts going. My dad would sit in the car and be like, where's the seat? You know, and he'd get it, and then at some point, but he'd have trouble finding, he'd have the male end, but he'd have trouble with the female end. At some point, he'd cross over the transmission into my side because it was tucked back or whatever.
Yeah.
The seatbelt skills. Now, this is not the 60 dimension. No, yeah, that, no, that's headphones.
I understand.
80s is the sit down and not quite not be acclimated in this vehicle.
We just now you're giving me pause because Christy's dad was sitting in the back of our car because we were all going somewhere with Tess in the car seat. The grandparents were in the back, and he's a man about 74 years old and couldn't negotiate that seatbelt.
I'm telling you, it's all part of my testing. Got to be weird when the person's done.
The first warning sign.
They're done wrestling with the headphones, and I'm like, "All right, that wraps it up." And they're like, "Where are we going to
play?
Is there an audio thing?" No. And we get back from Chick-fil-A, and I'm like, "All right, see you on the other side." What?
Don't worry, you won't know.
So I was traveling today. I encountered one of my favorite characters on the road. You guys, tell me. What you think. I was running late, as I'm always running. Well, not running late, but running scared.
Kind of close.
I had to get
the Corolla way.
I had a bunch of podcasts to do. Garagus got swapped out sort of last second. He's in town. He's coming in. Blah, blah, blah. We're going to move this and do that. I got the guys at the new warehouse. I'm over at the knew I got to run by there, tell them what to do, and then run out again. And I'm leaving my house, and I have this thought. I have a signal that's red that I drive through. Mm-hmm. But if there's somebody in front of me, they obey the law, mm-hmm. and I can't drive through it. Then there's another signal, which is the small street meets the big street syndrome, which is that's a long wait, and then it's a fast cycle. You know those ones?
Yep.
We all know those ones. You know, you pull up the Laurel Canyon and Ventura Boulevard, it's 50-50.
Yeah.
That, wait, as long that way as you do the other. You pull the little Hesby Street running into Riverside, and you're going to wait. You're going to wait.
Don't
for a
I
while.
Know it?
So I thought, okay, I'll go the side street route. I'll just wait for the signal, and I'll go through it. I'm not going to do the one that I drive through. I'm going to do the other one. And as I'm pulling up, I'm looking at the light. It's red, of course, because it almost always is. There's one car parked and waiting on my side street. Then there's a pickup truck with a camper shell on it that says something like, "My dog is my co-pilot," or something like that. And then there's me.
No
truck nuts. I wish there was truck nuts. And this guy is driving down the side street at 9 miles an hour. Mm. And I'm up behind him, and we're 200-300 feet away from the signal, but I'm having signal anxiety because if it changes now,
you're gonna miss your window.
It cycles fast. So I'm just kind of riding up this guy, just kind of right. Come on, come on, come on. Here we go. Yep. Look, you got to know this signal's gonna go. When it goes, it's gonna go fast. And at a certain point, he stops 50 feet away from the car in front of him and just comes to a complete another stop and just stops.
Cautious driver.
We're both stopped. I'm behind him, and the car that's waiting at the signal is 50 feet above them, and it's still red, but it's going to go. When it goes, we're not in the position to
take advantage.
Jump on this, and we stop, and we just come to a complete stop, and we're just stopped on the side street, and his front bumper is 50 feet away from the other guy's rear bumper, and it's one of those marathon signals if you miss it, and I'm in a hurry. So I sit. I always give people the, I don't know, maybe spilled his coffee on his lap or maybe the phone dropped or something. I'm going to give him the ability to like pull over or do something. But they just stopped. And we waited. We waited a little more and he just stopped. And so at some point, I gave the lightest toot I could do on my horn.
Just to scoot up?
Not lean. Go pull up because when the signal changes, we're not going to make it. I gave a light toot on the horn. Almost instantly, his left hand came out of the window as a fist, which then blossomed into a majestic finger.
Oh, wow.
Fuck you.
Wow.
Now,
he was hoping for that horn.
I don't know.
That was all by design.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what people's expectations in life are. You've just stopped in the middle of the street. You're allowed to have issues, but do them next to the curb. Mm-hmm. Like, just you don't want to drive, or there's an issue, or you're looking for something, or whatever. Just pull over.
But that stop in the middle of the street was for you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
So I got the stop in the middle of the street for me, tooted the horn, and then I got the finger. And now
it's on.
What people don't realize is so then the signal changed, and it changed quickly, and this guy has fingers remorse. because there's nothing worse than telling someone to F off and then having them park behind you for 10 minutes and just stare a hole in the back of your neck. So now the first car goes, and this guy scrambles to get across, but he's 50 feet back, and he's a little out of it. And he essentially just runs a red just to get away from me. But either way, mission accomplished. I didn't make the signal, and he was almost killed doing it. And I just thought, what gives? Yeah. Why did God create so many of these people? And what must encounters be like for this individual? What about when his wife wants him to do something?
This can't or be the cops? Only time.
Or, this is a mode, he's in.
Yeah.
This is a mode. What is that? Yeah. Why are there so many of these
the world.
People? They register their vehicles. They have a license. They pay taxes. They go to the grocery market. Why are they unable to function with human beings?
Part of their function, I think, is I promise you, this guy and people like him assuage they know what they did was wrong. Their version of the story later is some asshole honked at me for no reason.
Right.
The like comedian leaving out the part where it's like, oh, I prevented him from making the light because I stopped 50 feet behind the car.
Yes. And also, the unlimited amount of time that you have to burn in your life. I was then, the night before. Now, listen, everybody. You know, people go, oh, well, you're rude if you honk. And my feeling is you're rude if you don't honk. Mm-hmm. I was going to a comedy store last night. I was on Sunset Boulevard. I had a stage time of 9:15. And it's a long ride. I'm busy, so I usually try to get there 5, 8, 10 minutes before I'm supposed to go on stage, always knowing they run a little bit long anyway. But last thing I want to do is just get there 40 minutes early and just hang. So I do the Waze, as I always tell you, and it's going to take 35 minutes, and I back time it, and then I leave. But I don't leave myself a huge pad, and I was driving down Sunset Boulevard, and I don't know why. Well, I do know why. There's a weird thing. The Comedy Store sold out. You're supposed to be up at 9:15, and you're looking down at the clock in your car, and it says 9:04. And you know you're going to pull in the next 3 or 4 minutes and walk out of your car, and then you can just walk onto stage or whatever. But there's something about sitting in your car where it says 9:03, and there's something about you being on the other side of Crescent Heights or Laurel Canyon, and Waze says you'll get there at 9:06. It's not going to be an issue, but there's something psychological.
Because missing that light, whatever light that is, missing a light, that's the difference between 1 and 3 minutes. You know what I mean? Especially when you're cutting it that close.
So we're sitting there, and there's the right lane, the middle lane, and the left lane of Sunset, the Sunset Strip. We're just going to cross over Laurel and head over into the heart of the Sunset Strip. And it's a red light, and we're backed up 5, 6 cars, and everyone's just sitting there. And then the light turns green, and magically nothing happens. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm noticing that cars on my left are going, and cars on the right are going. They're turning right up Laurel Canyon. But our lane isn't moving. And I start kind of like looking over the cars in front of me, and I've noticed that the lead car from the middle lane has decided they needed to turn right as well. Right. So I start honking.
That's a violation of the social contract.
There's four cars behind
who aren't
honking. By the way, if you want to cross Laurel, there's a small street 80 feet ahead. You can just turn right. Here's the point.
If you missed your turn.
You missed it. But look.
Now figure something out.
You missed it, and here's the dealio. It's going to set you back about 90 seconds. You're going to cross the intersection. You're going to turn right. You're going to just double back and fix it. You need to fix it. You screwed
it
up. You need to fix it. Stop middle of the intersection, waiting for all the cars in the right to go before you turn. Now, I have seen very successfully this person honk shamed through the intersection. The person behind him just leans on it and stays on it. And at some point it becomes too much and the person just drives forward. But the person behind ain't honking and the person behind them ain't honking. And I'm honking, but everyone's looking at me like, what?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Listen, if you're the person behind that person, or I will deputize any human being that's in that car with that person who goes, oh, shit, we're supposed to turn. Just go straight. Just go.
We can make it up.
There's a million different. We can do a U-turn. We can turn up a side street. We can pull into a parking lot and back it out. We can do a million.
Any number of remedies.
A number of remedies, and they're all well under 5 minutes. And by the way, we screwed up. Not all the guys behind us. They didn't screw up.
Yeah.
One of them's supposed to be on stage at the Comedy Store. So please, people, honk at these people, would you?
It's your job.
And who is, and what is that wiring? Again, much like the wiring of the guy who stops in the street and then tells me to fuck off. What is that wiring of the person that goes, you know, I should have done this, and I didn't, but I have no problem with everyone behind me just literally sitting in the middle of the street staring at a green light, and it's going to sight. We're just going to have to wait for it to go by because you are going to try to wedge yourself into this.
That's a sociopath.
It is.
It's someone a sociopath. Doesn't care about the people behind them.
Right. Well, to be fair to them,
perhaps they don't consider the
they were never born. Yeah. The people I know they're that way. Yep. It's not like they're considering the people behind them and then weighing the evidence. They're just, you were never born and I was.
Oh, there's more cars?
I was born, you weren't. That's how it works. All right, so.
How was the set?
Oh, it was very good. That was the first 20 minutes. It was very good, and I think Tom Papa came on after me and made a joke about me.
That's how you know you've arrived.
It was good. And then now there's some controversy with Sonny because he's got to get in the pool and now he's got a cold.
Ooh.
From getting in the pool?
Well, listen, here's how it's going to work. Cold and cold aren't linked, just like fat and fat aren't linked.
The virus is called cold, cause cold.
Yeah, the work, it's like work becomes a negative thing because it's got the word work in it, and then fat is fat, and cold is cold. People just drew a line, like, you're going to catch your death, cold. So he has, I don't know, you can look it up, Max Zapata. See, my thing is I'm going out every single day this week, and now that means a lot of pool time for Sonny, but he stayed home sick from school today with a cold, which is going to be his argument
his
for the pool.
Note.
And because...
The cold.
Hmm?
He stayed home with a cold. If there was not vomit on the ground in my household, then there was no staying home. And even then, it was negotiable.
Yeah, but there's a new... See, there... All the school, all the faculty, and the administrators become enablers because they shout it from the mountaintop. If your kid has as much as the sniffles, don't bring him around me. I'm in a vat of Purell. And I'm gloved up. So do not bring your little petri dish in here. So they basically say, like, imagine if when you were a kid. Somebody said, look, if you have as much as the sniffles, you don't come in.
I would awesome.
Have, can do.
I would have fucking taken that and ran with it, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right. So that's, the decree is don't come in if there's anything. And the kids are like done and done.
And I think when we were little, if we went to the nurse's office, they wouldn't even call your parents if it wasn't above 101 and you had a fever.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Sonny's going to plead his case to Lynette that the pool made him sick. We all know scientifically it didn't.
We all know?
Lynette doesn't.
I was going to say.
Lynette is...
She's buying what he's selling?
she's going to be completely down with the pool made him sick, and thus he will get off the pool detail for quite some days.
Brutal.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He's going to have to do, what, 5 make goods?
I don't know.
Or not.
I don't know anymore. Either way, Luke Kuechly's family's rich. That much I know.
That's all that matters.
I had a, let's see. I had a philosophical thought for you guys. Let's see. We'll do Tales from the Cheap. Do I have any calls, Max Zapata? Tales from the Cheap calls?
Yeah, we'll take them after break.
I will take them after break. I want to float a quick theory in front of you guys and tell me what you think. I'm fascinated by this society we're in now where information's at everyone's fingertips, but people know what they know and they feel what they feel. Yeah. And like I said, you could not convince Lynette that the cold water didn't cause Sonny's. There's not enough articles on the internet to ever, whatever, just like all the people that are using tons of shampoo and tons of facial cleansers and stuff who've been told not to do it. It doesn't matter. They're gonna soldier on forward. So I know what I know, but I'm wondering if I know what I know. You know, there's only so much room in your mind's locker to fit so many things. You really just have to start pushing other things out to let other things enter. Some people have bigger lockers. Some people have smaller lockers. But when I took all the girls to the snow at Bear Mountain a couple of weeks ago, as I was telling you, at one point it was like 1 o'clock and they're all like, we're hungry. And I was like, we're pulling into Bear Mountain. We're pulling into the tubing place, the sled run, luge. It's fun. I said, well, we'll see about eating here. And they all sort of piled out of the car like, we're starving. We're starving. And we went up to the front of the line where the person from Bear Mountain had the red windbreaker on. It's like official something, 40-year-old woman. And I noticed and remembered from last time I was there that there was sort of a restaurant up top, burgers and fries, you know, corn dogs and whatnot. And then there's stairs. And I started to notice that it looked like the stairs had been cordoned off with some yellow tape. And it looked like some construction going on. Man. I noticed construction. That's my wiring. So I was like,
the humblest brag of all.
Yeah. It looks like there's some, looks like there's under construction and looks like, the restaurant's closed. But I just said to my dad, just ask the lady standing by the stairs that are cordoned off. Is there a place to eat? Is the restaurant open? Are they still serving? Blah, blah, blah. And, she went up to the woman and she said to the woman, is the restaurant open? Do they serve food? Is there any place we can get food here? And she said, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, And all the girls commented, all the 13-year-old girls, as we're realizing the restaurant was closed and there was a single vending machine that was in sort of the changing area or whatever, that why don't you know? Work here and you're standing by the stairs that go up to the restaurant that's closed for construction. Why don't you know? Now, I don't know means sort of fuck off. It's like the new fuck off. But why don't you know, and how come more people don't know what's going on? I talk to people about their business or about details or about things that they should readily know super easily, and they go, I don't know, but I bet this woman knows tons of other things in her heart and in her mind's eye. You know what I mean? Like, we've moved the actual information out and replaced it with feeling-based information. Mm. I bet she has 1,000. It used to be people had no feelings-based information. It was all just mechanical information. Now, here are the hours. Here's why. No, it's closed. Right, right. And it's going to be supposed to be completed on March 1st. It'll be open again. No, it was just, I work here. I stand in front of the stairs to go to the restaurant. I must have 1,000 people a day ask me about the restaurant. I don't know is my answer. And also, there's a vending machine that's 14 feet from where we are. She could have just go, restaurant's closed. You want some chips? You go to the vending machine. But she did not know. But I bet she has a lot of feelings. I bet if we talk to her about her pets or about government or about society or about her ex,
she'll bend your ear.
There's going to be some feelings there. So,
how old would you peg her for?
She struck me as a later 35 to 40, I think I would have had her for.
This is going
to
sound like cranky old grandpa from me, of all people. But like, I remember when I worked as a grocery store bagger for a couple of years in high school, I wasn't allowed to ever say, customers would ask you all the time, I see you walking around the store like, oh, where is this? Do you stock this? What's the price on this? That whole thing, I was never allowed to say, I don't know. It was always, the answer was, I'll find out for you. If you didn't know, you know what? I'll find out for you. Because that inspires confidence. That means you're helpful. The customer feels welcome, as opposed to, I don't know, good luck.
Yes.
Bug off.
I completely agree.
You weren't allowed to say, I don't know.
You weren't allowed to say a lot of things.
Because where do you go from there?
Nowhere, which is the point.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to say things to your boss, and you weren't allowed to say things to the customer.
Indeed.
And now that we've figured out this level playing field where there is no hierarchy, then there are no bosses, and there are no customers, and there are no underlings, and everyone's a general, and there's no privates in this man's army, and that's it. So that you don't feel obliged. I think people felt obliged to go, let me find out, or I'll get it to, or whatever. There was no such thing as this, I don't know. Like, leave me alone.
Did you hear her say, I don't know, or Natalia reported?
She did.
In her cadence, was it, I don't know, or is, I don't know? Like, ditzy or passive aggressive?
She was like, I don't know. Go figure out. Yeah. Go do something other than this. That was it.
Because I don't know if she was just nice and dumb or just like really wanted you guys away from her.
No, I don't think she was nice and dumb. She was just...
Couldn't be bothered.
She was like... you know, it's like me. Like, I would get into trouble because I always felt obligated to answer almost any question. Like, who's funnier, men or women? Men are funnier. All right. So Adam announces women aren't funny, and then I get into trouble. But I always felt like hypothetical questions and or questions, I was obliged to answer, or informational questions. I'd have to go find out. Or you would then make me curious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like if you said, you know, how many liters in a gallon? I'd go, I don't know. I'd want to go find out.
And I feel weird about not knowing.
I feel weird about not knowing. 3.8, I think. But anyway, we're past that. Well, anyway.
What'd you eat?
They went to the vending machine and, they got what they got out of the vending machine, and then later on the way down the hill, we went with the In-N-Out, which is nice. Basically it transcends all ages and all ethnicities and all cultures. Yes. It is just the one goddamn thing we agree on. It's not divisive like halva. You know,
we can all get on the same page.
Every human being agrees on In-N-Out.
That's
girls, boys, young and old, they're all there.
Great equalizer.
By the way, if you pull into an In-N-Out, you'll see 80-year-old dudes in line and young Hispanic dudes and goth guys. Like, it's one thing everyone agrees on. In and goddamn out. Yeah. So I went in there. I did the move where the line was the 35 cars in it. So got out, I went in, and then my daughter did the super proactive. She was texting me, you know, extra Thousand Island and things like that. You become like, in these days, a parent is like half prison bitch, half drug mule. That's essentially, it wasn't like, you know, when I was growing up, it's like, hey, son, fetch me my pipe. You know, and I'm putting my feet up. No. You're just muling food in and out, running around. Can I get a ride? You know.
Did her friends have the chutzpah to put in their order? Because I'd be like, I don't know, whatever's cheapest. Just you tell your dad to get whatever. Or don't get me anything.
Regular, everybody, there was a strawberry shake, a vanilla shake. Those were the two girls, no fries. Everyone had regular cheeseburgers, and the time was like burger, no cheese, no, and fries, no milkshake. My bigger question is like, I don't get why you're not just going for broke here. Yeah. Like, why isn't everyone getting a milkshake and a large fries? If calories were no issue.
Oh, you just went there in the slopes?
And money were no issue, then why isn't everyone getting a shake and fries? Anyway, there was that. Then I did the thing. The worst, I'll tell you, there's three. Here are the three things you don't wish for your waistline. There's two. We're all trying to stay on the Vinny diet. We're all trying to watch our P's and Q's when it comes to the... No sugar and no grain and all that, but we're all human and we slip up.
We're mortal.
And it's, I can drive right past the In-N-Out and go home. It's tough going on a run and people are ordering and you're going in. It's just, I break down. I go, fuck it. I'm getting a double-double. So I've said it many times. The worst calories you can ever take in, there's three. There's drunken, I don't remember. Who left that pizza box on my sofa? Thing, oh, I ate the pizza? Oh, I don't even remember eating the pizza. There's that. That's bad. There's you draw yourself a big slice of cake or pie, and you start in on it, and then the fucking phone rings, and it's your mom or somebody, and you're talking to them, and as you're talking to them, you're sort of pecking away at the pie or whatever, and at some point you hang up and you look down and like the cake's gone or the pie's gone and you're like, fuck, I just ate a piece of pie and all I remember is talking to my mom or arguing with someone about something because you just kind of did it a little sliver at a time. But the conversation was 12 minutes long, you just ate it.
Yeah.
And it feels like nothing.
Yeah.
No satisfaction at all. There's a third category. It's like eating an In-N-Out burger while driving three kids.
Mm.
You put the thing, like, you put the wrapper in your lap.
Yep. You're not enjoying it.
You're like steering with your knee a little bit. You got the lane assist thing. Okay. You're trying to, some of it is dribbled onto your jacket. You know what I mean? And at some point, you have a handful of Thousand Island, no burger, all the calories, and zero enjoyment.
You're spending more time like on the mechanics of eating than you are on the enjoyment.
Right. Yeah. Trying to get down the hill.
I don't know where you guys' power rankings would be, but
that's good.
I think phone calls the worst, drunken is second, because at least you're drunk, but you're there. I mean, while you're drunk. And I think the third is while driving.
Yeah.
And now it's like I'd blow someone for a wet nap, because now I got the hands all smell like onions.
It's speaking of your drunken theory, that was a news story the other day. I didn't pull it because it was so stupid, but somebody called the police after a night of drinking because they woke up and thought somebody stole their chicken sandwich.
Really?
So this does happen to people.
That guy may have been the cousin of the guy who was in front of me in the middle of the street stopping. Those people and the people who think the police are their personal valets.
Yes.
Like, hey, my neighbors, that guy's got a bird feeder and wind chimes, and I need you guys to roll on it. Like, you're not Hitler.
Yeah.
This is not the Gestapo. You're not allowed to dispatch your unit to people.
Yeah, they're having a 40th birthday next door, and it's 9:42 at night, and this is absurd.
Right.
Someone's got to be done.
All right, Brian, you got a BetDSI there somewhere?
Oh.
I think that's our plan, and then we'll break and do a Tales from the Cheap. Sorry.
Good news, everyone. NFL playoffs roll on, and we're heading into conference championships. Add excitement. Make BetDSI.com your betting partner. Use BetDSI's live betting platform. You probably haven't ever bet the game live, have you, Adam?
I've done a few bets, like, after halftime.
Okay.
Bets are at halftime.
I have done a lot of live betting, and it is fun because the bets change with every like first down or every touchdown or field goal. It's quite enjoyable. You can do that at BetDSI. New members get a 100% bonus match with promo code ADAM101. That's double your money. 100% bonus match. Two NFC championship games this weekend. The Tennessee Titans travel to the KC Chiefs. The Tennessee Titans are... Is that really true? Oh, on BetDSI, they're getting 9.5.
Come on!
That is a resurgent team, man. They're playing real well right now.
Playing inspired. And I'm so weird that I'm like, but when do the Patriots play? Because I'm not seeing it.
Next year? I saw the
schedule. Are they playing on Monday night? They're not. They're out!
Later in the day, we got the Green Bay Packers getting another 7.5 points at the San Francisco 49ers. You can make bets on any of those games you want. Use the promo code ADAM101 for a limited time 100% bonus offer at BetDSI.com. It's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI.
You are a pro, my friend. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Tales from the Cheap, and we're giving away a couple of Kimmel's books as well right after this.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. Live all winter long.
Well, Kimmel dad, Adam to get on stage in free ball. Totally unprepared with no material at all. He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
What the hell he's gonna say until you tell him so.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
Until you give him an idea.
Get your ticket for the show. What word awaits? He's gonna go.
Adam Carolla is unprepared at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee on January 24th and in Chicago at Park West on January 25th. Get prepared for Adam Carolla is unprepared by getting your tickets at adamcarolla.com. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Yeah, this is Josh in Austin, Texas. I've got a question. I don't understand. I'm 50 years old. Why now I have been seeing dudes sitting in the passenger seats and girls driving? Man, I see it all the time. The chicks are driving the dudes around. I mean, I don't grasp it, man. I don't know what's happening to the dudes. I think they're just becoming chicks. Sad, man. It's sad, you know. I'll drive my wife around, always am the one driving. I don't get it. Later.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, I'm going to give those dudes the benefit of the doubt and assume they're way over the legal limit.
Wasted, yeah.
Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Speaking of in 50 years, we'll all be chicks. I talked to Larry David day before yesterday.
Oh, really?
Trying to work out the getting him as a guest on the show, which is in motion. We're working on it. It shall happen. All right. Shall be.
Great.
And he just paused and he went, I've been reading your book. It's hysterical. It's hilarious. And I said, you've been reading my book? And he said, yeah. And I said, which one? And he was like, oh, no one can ever remember the name of anyone's book. Like, in the, I said, in 50 years, what was it, not Taco Bell material? I told Matt to send him over a box of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because,
he just picked one.
You can get familiar with my stuff. And he... Evidence, you know, he's one of those guys who reads books, I guess, and he travels.
One of those dudes.
One of those weirdos. And he's like, man, seriously, like, it is really funny. Like, people are asking me why I'm laughing, like, on an airplane, and I tell them I'm reading Adam Carolla's book. And I was like, my God, this feels so good. Like, he's really drilling down nice. On how funny it is and how much he's enjoying it. So that
was feathering your cap.
Yes, that was nice. So, and it's also... It's interesting that we're in this business. I'm trying to think of other businesses that work this way. Mark Garagos, just because he was in here, he knows every lawyer and every other lawyer and like what cases they do and what they didn't do and who's good and who's not good. And he's been up against them and what judges and whatever.
Right.
Showbiz doesn't really work that way. Like, I know Larry David well. I don't think Larry David had any idea who I was up until 10 minutes ago. You know, now if this is the lawyer world, we've both been in town and doing this for 25 years. We would be familiar with both. Garagos knows every lawyer and knows exactly what they're up to, good and bad and whatever. There's plenty of that in show business where people have no idea, never seen.
Sure.
I mean, like, the first time I did Howard Stern, and he's like, wow, you know, move out to New York and sit in the Artie seat. And I was like, I have a TV show. I have multiple TV shows and a syndicated radio show. And I can't just move out to New York. And he's like, well, what are you doing? You know, and I'm like, well, Howard goes to bed at 8.
Yeah.
And my shit all started after 10.
Mm-hmm.
So in his world, there's just this guy.
Day's over.
Who's super funny.
Come
just
on
move
over.
Out, move out and hang out. Like, no idea what I was up to. Yeah. There's a lot of that in showbiz. Yes.
It's also hard. Jeannie, you must get this a lot because I do. Because, like, when I'll just be talking to someone, like, oh, what do you do? Blah, blah, podcast. Like, and then it comes up, like, oh, I listen to podcasts. And, like, oh, what podcast do you listen to? And they'll name three or four popular podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no idea what that is. And it's not a holier than thou thing. It's just there's so many goddamn podcasts.
That happens less with me since I have a podcast called Easy Listening with Gina Grad and Teresa Strasser, which is a podcast about podcasts. But
begin?
I used to feel like that.
Oh,
how dare you?
Okay.
So, anyway, we've coached. Hopefully we'll get Larry coached up and we'll talk to him. But I'm just flattered that the guy who is a guy I respect immensely in terms of creating comedy or writing comedy is appreciating that book so much. And also the new book is available for pre-order and you can get that. You can get that at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at Amazon. I'm your emotional support animal. I always have to go slow. Navigating our all woke, no joke culture. And you can do that like I said, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I think it drops in May, but order it now. Why not?
Day before your birthday.
Day before my birthday. All right. So we have, we got a bunch of Jimmy's books, The Serious Goose, and we thought we'd give some out. And Jimmy definitely did these illustrations. Oh, written and illustrated by Jimmy Kimmel.
There you go.
Yeah. Jimmy's, one of the first things, Jimmy is a creative, an artist. When I met him, he made claymation things. he's an artist sort of at heart. He's an artist.
Well, he does artistic pancakes, doesn't he?
He's a creative type,
right, into every facet of his life.
Yes, he is a creative type. And he always was. And like I was sort of a building type who did comedy, and he was like a artist type who did comedy. But his heart is in art. All right, do we have an opening to this one?
20-year-old Tupperware. Homemade clothes. Powdered eggs. It's time for Tales from the Cheap.
By the way, if you buy Jimmy's book, all the proceeds are going to the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles.
Ah.
And if you pre-order my book, proceeds are going up my nose, baby. Michael?
Yes, sir. How's it going?
44, Stockton, California.
Hey there.
What's going on?
Stockton. I want to preface this call saying I'm on an iPhone holding it to my ear like it's 1989. No headphones, okay?
All right. Now we know.
We hear you.
Baseline.
Loud and at work.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. Okay, I was going to say my cheap story is back when I was in college, I used to make a Filipino dish called adobo.
Mm.
But I'd have to steal the soy sauce and the vinegar from the generic Pan Express that we had in the commons.
Mm. Yeah. It's funny. I have a fridge filled with all those little packets because no one can throw them away because there's something in them, but no one will ever use them. We're creating a weird society where no one wants to add to that big landfill in the middle of the ocean. So we're now creating my own landfill in my kitchen. Yeah. Like I won't part with any of these containers or cups or travel anything. So now I open the fucking cupboard and they all pile on. I'm not throwing this stuff away. Nope. It's going to end up in the middle of the ocean. But now it's just ending up in the middle of my kitchen.
Do you love relish that much?
Yeah, I'm becoming like a de facto hoarder.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
Work for a minute.
Michael had to go to work.
Yeah, hold on. Michael, you gone? Yeah, I guess he is.
You know, speaking of that, another college move that my friends did, and I always cringed because they knew what we were doing, and they would just kind of tolerate it until they didn't. My friends would always ask for whatever drink, you know, a margarita or, you know, the cranberry.
Cape Cod.
Yeah, Cape Cod, Seabreeze, whatever. Ice on the side. So you get double the drink,
and
then they just give you a cup of ice.
Yeah.
And we got away with that for a while, but it was embarrassing when they would when they'd ask for that.
There was a mean like vendor in like our like student union area who like refused to give you no ice. Like you'd ask for no ice because the drink's plenty cold. You get more of it. That's a cheap move when you're in college. And at a certain point, they still refused to start giving you no ice.
I'm trying to think. You know, now everything is so regulated that they have this sort of booze poor airport stopper thing, which I just hate. It's like you're not even a bartender anymore. You're just some stooge who just stands back there. And also, in the world, like all these things that are ultra important and then they're not important. This is why I don't really trust any of anyone's system. It's like, we have the terrorist alert system. Yellow, well, that's heightened. And then magenta, that's stable. But then orange, and they're like, nobody. It hangs around for 12 years. No one knows what the fuck it means. And then they get rid of it one night. Nobody gives a shit. You have to put all your toiletries in a clear Ziploc bag and travel. That was lots of warning.
Thing.
We'll provide the bags. Mm. If you don't have the bags, we'll provide. Now it's like, who cares?
Nope. No.
It's all going through the x-ray. We never needed to do it.
Doesn't matter.
The bar at the airport for a good 4 years was, I need to see ID. I have to see ID. You go in there, like I said in one of my books, there's a guy with a full beard, 70-year-old guy. He's like, I need ID. Like, I need ID. We have to see ID. Everyone shows ID. Now, no. Now you just pull up. I mean, if you look like you're 40, order a drink, no ID. So what is all this? What are all the mandates? They're like, we got to do this. We got to do that. And then all of a sudden, it's like, we don't have to do it anymore. We're done. Why do we impose so much of that shit on ourselves?
Why is it so urgent at the time?
I know. Michael?
Yeah, I'm here.
So, were your parents cheap?
They're immigrants, so kind of. Yes. I for sure got it from them. Because I think about, I could have spent the extra $4.50 to get soy sauce and vinegar, rather than spending all day smuggling in my pocket 5 packs at a time, because you couldn't do all 20, or she would come out and say something to you.
Right.
When's that double going to be ready? Give me a week. I got to steal all soy sauce. Yeah.
What do you do now?
So I did it before class, grab 5. I had to pass through the commons each time between classes and dinner time. I had it all done. It took longer to open up and squeeze them in a cup than it did anything.
Do you make a decent living now?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Good.
I'm in a casino, Northern California.
Ooh la la.
What are you doing there?
Brian will see you there this weekend.
I'm just a supervisor. I just walk around and
enforcer.
Change. I'm a glorified change.
But you maker. Do all right.
What's that? Yes.
You do all right. Yeah, you know
you
what
pit
I,
balls?
I didn't, you know what I've noticed from talking to a fair amount of people? A fair amount of people who don't seem to have the extra money to gamble do a lot of, they
find
spend
the
a
way.
Lot of time at the casino.
Find yeah.
the
way.
They
your ship will come in.
Find a way, man. I talked to some guys I work with, and they're like, we're going to the casino this weekend. I'm like, all right. I never want to set them straight, but they love it.
I'm going to do a Vegas edition of Tales from the Cheap from my 20s. You know what I mean? Or what, eight guys in a room. We had eight guys in a room.
Yeah, it's standard.
And we asked for eight keys, and we checked in. I'll check in at once, of course. It was just me. And I was like, I'll take eight keys. And the poor innocent girl behind the desk was like, eight keys? I'm like, oh, you know, guess I lose seven.
Super forgetful. I could remember staying with Jimmy and Big Tad and Big Tad's stripper brother all in the same room, all three major snorers except for me. That was painful. Eating at Binion's. It's so funny with Jimmy, like 99-cent steak and potato to order two of them, you know?
Let me ask you a question. That many snorers better than one snorer, because that many snorers means at least it's kind of like white noise. As opposed to one, this is kind of keeping you awake.
I remember it was the worst night of my life. And obviously the trip there with him farting was the worst ride of my life. What was Binion's? Was it $1.29? I think it was 99 cents. When did Binion's steak and baked potato, when did that shift from 99 cents to God whatever? And imagine Jimmy eating a 99 cent steak.
The guy
who
mainly loves food more than anything. Fine food.
Mm. Yeah.
The funny thing was, it was worth 99 cents. That was not a good cut of meat.
No, it wasn't. But you see, I didn't even, first things first. I grew up in an environment where I was like, there was steak. There wasn't filet mignon. Right. There wasn't bone-in. Mm-hmm. There wasn't tomahawk. There
generic
wasn't ribeye.
Beef.
All we had was steak. I didn't know the other types of snakes, just like steaks. It's like I wouldn't know any other kinds of caviars or champagnes or anything. It was just like, steak.
Steak is steak.
It's something called steak. It's expensive, and you're not eating it. That's all we knew. Shrimp was shrimp. I didn't know the other sizes of shrimps or the prawns or anything. Shrimp is shrimp. It's expensive. You're not eating shrimp. Steak is steak. It's expensive. You don't eat steak.
Now, think about it. In my youth, I think I didn't know what steak was. I thought it was all pot roast because that's all we ever had. You know, it wasn't until later in life that I had actual steak.
You guys are not from Kansas City.
Oh, God.
Did you grow up with Salisbury steak, which is like compressed steak?
Salisbury steak was when you spin the wheel of frozen dinners. Mm-hmm. That was bankruptcy. That was the bankrupt one. That was like the power ranking. Yeah, the power rankings were for the frozen, you know, banquet TV dinners or the Hungry Man TV dinners. It was the Thanksgiving turkey one and or the fried chicken. That was sort of the top of the heap.
Yeah.
And at some point, it got down to the Salisbury steak, which even at 12, I realized was a disaster. Yeah. It was a particle board of meats.
Speaking of old-timey dinners, you know what Christy made the other night? Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah.
It was ground beef mixed with hot Italian sausage.
No.
Oh, that was so good.
And don't sleep on that hard-boiled egg in there, man.
Never had the hard-boiled egg.
I got Olga coached up. That's the way Lotsy Gorog, my grandpa, used to do, have a full cooked egg.
Just for funsies? Because it doesn't...
When you cut that slice and you get it just right and you see that center with the yolk and the white and it's, you know, half inch thick or 3/4 of an inch thick and you nail it just right, especially if you like a little ketchup on the side, you get just a little with the egg and the beef and the whatever, it works, man.
I wonder if it's practical, too, because the middle of a meatloaf can be not always cooked the same as the edges, so that way you get a little more of an even cook.
Don't sleep on meatloaf, man. Not that you did, but I love goddamn meatloaf.
Does the family know not to touch daddy's egg in the middle?
It sounded so sexual.
Jesus.
And bizarre. I've also realized that I think what divides. We're talking about foods that unite. Everyone's down with In-N-Out. Mm-hmm. Everyone is divided with Halva.
They are.
You know, they're torn apart. It tears at the fabric of our society. Halva does. But,
falls apart like Halva?
But the deviled egg. I have no idea. I had a brunch with Diane Farr the other week. I was like, why don't we order deviled eggs? She's like, I've never had a deviled egg.
What?
That
was a staple of brunches and
some people,
Easters.
I can't get enough deviled eggs. Many people hate deviled eggs.
I will order the appetizer deviled eggs for myself. The one's meant to be shared for the table. I was like, what are you guys having?
I never had a deviled egg in my life until this show when you guys started talking
about
deviled eggs.
That's what I'm saying.
And then I ordered them yesterday. These adorable little deviled eggs.
Pictures of deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs. And they're delicious. But my family is a no-fly zone in the Grad family.
I don't know. Let's get an informal polling around here. Dawson, deviled eggs.
Oh, you sure
love them. Grew up with them.
Yeah, I know that. Max Pat, I don't have to ask you.
That's right.
What was like a weird version? Filipino version?
No.
Do you have a cheap story, Max Pat?
Yeah, I do. So growing up in an Asian household, a common thing is you take in the grandmother. The grandmother lives with you.
Ugh.
Yeah. So I was raised by my grandma.
That's a whole bunch of different smells, you know what I mean? Yeah. She's got something brewing in the kitchen that's funkifying the house. Her bedroom's not helping.
Always
stolen soy sauce.
Right, yeah.
So a thing my grandma used to do is with our old clothes, specifically our pants. When they would get too raggedy, a lot of holes in them, she would cut the legs, they would just be single pant legs, and we'd use them as floor mats growing up. So whenever my friends would come over, there'd just be like a strip of jean, just like all.
She'd cut them, she'd fillet them, right?
Yeah,
butterfly them or whatever, just splay them out.
Yeah, and those were our floor mats growing up. Were our old pants.
She might be a genius. That's very Pinterest.
Yeah.
My dad did the same thing with old t-shirts that would become rags, but this was a little more. That's not out for display.
Could also make them pillowcases. We always did that in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when no one felt like doing laundry, you just put a t-shirt over your pillow.
They have pillowcases.
And two sheets.
Two sheets. I remember, I'm trying to think of my dad. My dad didn't have a lot of cheap practices. He was just cheap. He was just cheap, but he didn't do that.
What's the difference?
One's a calorie burner.
Lazy meets cheap. He wasn't going to, I'm going to mend those britches myself. Let me get my kid out. You know, there wasn't a lot of I'm going to get up and patch the roof myself. My dad was super cheap without any pulse. So he would just sit around being cheap. So
lowest common denominator.
Yeah, he wouldn't do anything, buy anything. You wouldn't get anything. He wouldn't give any money. That would be it. But he wasn't out doing the sort of things that make great stories, like Lynch famously, his dad using the stop sign to do the corroded, rusted out Chevette floorboard on the driver's passenger side, you know, blah, blah, blah.
That, responsible for many deaths on that intersection.
Those are stories. My grandfather was cheap and did a lot of those sort of contraptions and stuff. He was losing his eyesight, and he'd build take a magnifying glass and put it on a swing arm and put a pipe clamp on it and swing it out in front of the whatever. He'd do a lot of I'm fixing it myself. I didn't really realize he was a hack at the time in terms of how to fix stuff. My mom was super poor and super downtrodden, super cheap too, but she didn't burn any calories either.
Right.
So didn't have, she just kind of hang out being poor.
No coat of many colors for you.
No, my grandmother had the Tupperware of many colors. Her whole thing was Tupperware. You can't take the Tupperware. Don't touch the Tupperware. Yeah. It's a bad sign when Tupperware becomes a big ticket item.
Yeah. Can't lose that.
In the house. You got one, Gina?
Well, I told you before the ice on the side, but I got to tell you, I think this is just a dad thing, that going to an IHOP or, you know, something like that when we were little, you know, when you get the kids menu, kids 6 and under eat for 50 cents or whatever. And when I was 7 or 8, the panic that would course through my veins when my dad would tell the waitress that I was 6, and I would just be, I thought the cops were coming to get us. Mm. I thought I'd be thrown in jail for this, but he did it every time.
Yeah, you can compare and contrast that to when I was playing a show in Reno or staying at Tahoe or something, and they did the buffet. Everyone eats at the buffet. It's free at the buffet. Mm. And they got the omelet maker over there and the ambrosia salad. This is 30 feet long of a croissant and Danish and everything. And, of course, Natalia's like, I want chocolate chip pancakes. I'm like, well, they whatever they got at the buffet.
That's it's all yours.
And next thing you know, like, Lynette's like flagging down the waiter, like, well, sir, we need to order. It's like, we're not ordering things. We have a free buffet.
They're dying to give it to you.
She's nine and this is free. Let's go. And it's like, you gotta understand what's kicking in my my brain. That's where the famous champagne incident happened. Max Zapata, wait. Oh, you got the Binions? The price of Binions. I must have been at Binions with Jimmy circa 1996, I would say. And my man, 95. I met Jimmy in 94. I'm probably going 95, 96, and I remember 99 cent, whatever, but was it that?
It was not that.
What was it? $1.99.
It was a $2 steak.
Oh,
it was $1.99.
10-ounce New York strip that came with salad, potato, vegetable, and rolls, served between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Oh, yeah, that was the deal. We'd have
to show up. Harbor special.
Yeah, we'd show up at like midnight. It was, I think it was $1.99 for the dinner, and we'd order two dinners.
Yeah, so it was called the Old Binions Steak Special. It originated like in the 50s and 60s. They just never changed their price, so it became a huge deal until 1995. They decided to raise to $3. They realized it was a huge mistake, and they went back to $2 in 97 and lasted a few months after that, and just it fizzled out after that.
What's it at now? We go to Binion. I mean, we go down to the downtown area sometimes.
I'm not it looks like it's not there. It's actually
anything
kind of a well-kept
bucks,
secret, too,
going.
within Vegas. Like, there wasn't a lot of publication about it.
They had a big Lucite chest that had, like, $1 million in gold in it, or bills, or chips, or something, too. So it was like this weird
pile.
Yin and a yang for poor people. Like, go eat a horrible piece of steak for free, and then
stare at money.
Now, if you had any of this money, you could go to a good steak joint, but you don't, loser. Weird. It was a pyramid of what was it? $1 million? Was that the Binions deal? Anyway,
that's right.
All right.
Oh my
do we
God.
Have a? Yeah, so that's what Jimmy and I do. We'd go eat $4 worth of steak dinner and then go stare at $1 million.
Is there no low end heist movie stealing the million out of Binions?
It's
pretty well displayed.
Yeah.
I know there's a party who goes, it's just sitting out. And then there's another party who goes, I bet they thought of that.
Nailed it down.
All right. Let's, do we have an outro here?
Tune in for more Tales from the Cheap, if you dare.
All right. I'm going to be at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee coming up on Friday, January 24th, and then Chicago, which is going to sell out if it hasn't already. So you want to jump on that. That'll be the 25th. Go to amcrow.com for all the live dates and all that as well. And Chassis, two S's and a Y, because Uppity is streaming now and all the movies are there. Joe West and Gabe Adams are both coming in. They have a very interesting story and relationship. And Joe West, I mean, he has multiple number one singles with, he's got Keith Urban and Tim McGraw, Toby Keith. He's got worked and done mixing with Shakira and Justin Timberlake, Indigo Girls, Warren Zevon, Steve Earle, everybody. We'll talk to those guys right after this.